KLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
And welcome back to the second half of Afternoons with Amos. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here in Indiana. Like, I think all of the sovereign states of this country and the District of Columbia has a Board of Education, whose job it is to make policy for education in that state, usually K through 12, and then there's some other body that sets educational policy for universities. In Indiana, that function is under the State Board of Education, which has representatives from each of the nine congressional districts plus some at-large representatives, and it is chaired by the elected superintendent of public instruction. The State Board of Education sets policy for education. They created, ultimately, the accountability system. They created all kinds of great things like ISTEP. They are told sometimes by the legislature to implement laws the legislature creates. And nobody really gave a hoot about the State Board of Education until the whole takeover situation about 3 years ago, when members of the State Board traveled to Gary and traveled all over IPS to make decisions about whether the state should take over certain schools here in Indianapolis, in Lake County, and I think in Fort Wayne was one other city. That's the first time people said, there's a State Board of Education. What do they do? After in the whole A through F mess over the past several years, and then in the transition from Dr. Tony Bennett to Glenda Ritz, some have said those televised hearings, now the State Board, are more exciting than a reality show on Bravo. To the point where one of those members, one of the Democratic members, the board is predominantly Republican because we have a Republican governor. Gordon Hendry is a Democrat on the State Board of Education. He's been on there for a little more than a year. And 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, he sent a letter to the editor that was published in the Indianapolis Star and I believe a number of other newspapers across the state, where he kind of called out Superintendent Glenda Ritz, who's also a Democrat. Gordon Hendry joins me live. Welcome.
Thank you, Amos. Glad to be here.
Why? First of all, when you got the call or the letter saying, would you be interested to serve on the State Board of Education? This was after Superintendent Ritz became superintendent and there were some these little going on. Why did you want to accept the challenge?
Well, first off, I think I bring a different perspective to the State Board of Education. Mm-hmm. I'm not an educator. But I am a business leader and an attorney. And most importantly, I have a daughter and will soon have a son in the Indianapolis Public Schools. So I'm a parent. And so I have a real vested interest in the strength of Indiana schools.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong on the timeline. At the point in which you joined the board last year, that was after some of the mess had occurred. Is that correct?
Yeah, I joined the board in, I believe, early October. So I'm the newest board member. Mm-hmm. It's been a great interesting time, as you noted. It's been very busy. There have been a number of extremely important issues that the board has had to face over the last 10 months or so. And we've got a number of very important issues facing us here in the coming months.
Is there a philosophical disagreement? First of all, is there any disagreement with you and Superintendent Ritz? That's the first basic question. And if there is disagreement, are they philosophical? Are they mechanical in terms of, I don't like how she runs a meeting? Is it stylistic? How would you describe it?
Well, I think.
Or am I mischaracterizing it completely?
You know, I think there are many points where we have common ground. Mm-hmm. And, I believe that she has the best interests of the school children of Indiana at heart. At the same time, like probably any issue we have as policymakers, some differences of opinion. And so, I certainly have my viewpoints and so have brought those to bear at the State Board of Education.
What are some of those differences? Because a lot of people listening don't go online and see the board meetings, and all they see about it on television is that it reminds folks of what IPS board meetings used to be like in the 80s and 90s, a food fight. And again, those are short 20-second clips of a five-hour meeting.
Sure, sure. And, you know, I think, first off, I just want to comment on the State Board of Education. I think there's been a lot of characterizations of the State Board of Education, and if you didn't look closer, you might think it truly was a Jerry Springer show, but that's actually not the case. We have a number of extremely respected individuals who serve on the Board of Education. You have teachers, superintendents, former superintendents, college professors, attorneys. And so really you've got a great group of individuals who I truly believe have the best interests of the school children, teachers, parents, administrators, and ultimately the schools at heart.
It seems at times, and going back, and I believe it was before you joined the board, one of the first meetings that I saw after Superintendent Ritz took office, and I'm watching it in my, online in my office, where one of the board members, Dan Elsner, president of Marion University, great respect for him, but it was almost like he was disrespecting the role of the chair. And, you know, you've served as chairs of organizations and hold the gavel. I've done the same. And it just reminded me of that kind of stuff. And it's like, this is not needed, because at the bottom line, she's not an appointed official. She was elected by the people of Indiana for good, bad, or indifferent. She got more votes than her opponent. She's in.
That's true. You know, the superintendent was elected by the voters in 2012 to be the superintendent of public instruction. And as I think I've said before, there's a role for the superintendent in the school system here in Indiana. But there's also a role for the governor, for the legislature, and for the State Board of Education. The State Board of Education really serves as essentially the board of directors for the Department of Education. And we really are charged by Indiana law to set policy for, as you mentioned in your opening, set education policy. And then ultimately the superintendent's responsibility is more of a managerial role in running the Department of Education, which is a very important job. But you have to appreciate everyone's place in the system. And the State Board of Education, you know, you've got, in addition to the superintendent, you have 10 individuals who feel very strongly about advancing Indiana schools and making our school system the best in the country. And so there are a number of ways we can do that. But really, our interest is advancing Indiana schools. And at times there have been some disagreements over policy and how meetings are run and so on. I think we all probably feel disappointed that there have been these clashes at board meetings. You know, sometimes that's how boards go when there are disagreements. But, you know, I think we hope that going forward there can be a higher level of functionality of the board meetings, that we can adhere to agreed upon rules and be respectful of the board governance rules. And hopefully there won't, we won't have the issues that we've had in the past.
In your letter, you kind of talk about lack of information coming to board members in a timely fashion. And at the same time, the superintendent has complained about a lack of information coming to her in a timely fashion. And I think this came to a head at last month's meeting in the whole Ed Power, Tinley, Arlington situation, where as I'm actually watching the video, both in my office and actually watching the video on the air here, we put a portion of it on the air, where you guys on the board look like you were like, what? And then the superintendent of public instruction also had the same. What? She didn't know that there had been conversations between Tinley and this agency, the Center for Education and Celestial whatever, CECI. You all didn't know the conversations were going on, and it was almost like the board that created the whole takeover school system that set this up, and the superintendent, you know, who's at the top of the pyramid, neither of you knew this crisis was hitting, but certain staff knew. And it was like, here's something that was so dysfunctional. You guys didn't know it as the board. She didn't know it as the elected official. And how do you keep these staffs keeping y'all informed? Yeah, because you guys have some things saying, well, Superintendent Rich didn't tell us this. And then she's got some things saying, well, CCI didn't tell us that. How do we get both of y'all sets working together? Because the Arlington situation affects 450 kids that live in my community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I live in that community as well, and I'm deeply concerned about the situation there. And fortunately, after that issue had been placed in our laps, and I think everyone on the board was equally concerned about what
and
had
you
been,
all had no inkling that was coming.
Well, we knew there were issues, but we didn't realize, and we weren't told until the meeting that it was as grave as it was. So fortunately, everyone agreed that there would be an immediate meeting between the city of Indianapolis, the deputy mayor for education, the superintendent and the Department of Education, CC and others, and obviously the affected parties to come together and figure out a solution. And fortunately, IPS stepped up with some additional funds, which, you know, if the building had become vacant, right, IPS would be responsible for anyways. So they were able to tap into those dollars to help keep the school open and meet the challenges that Tinley was facing.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Gordon Hendry. Is a member of the Indiana State Board of Education. 239-1310, 239-1310. You can send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Before we take a break, the superintendent sent her response to the waiver to the Department of Education at the deadline, which was, I remember, June 30. And it was a very, very detailed waiver, response to the waiver. Then it leaked out because the staff of CECI never sent it to the media, or if they did, they missed me that day. A response dated the first week of July that, as I skim read it, I didn't read all gazillion pages, but skim reading it, it sounds like they were nitpicking the waiver or the application. Why would even the state board or the staff or you all even authorize sending a response that in essence nitpicks what you're applying? That's like a student submits a paper, a term paper, and the student across the aisle submits a counter paper saying, ah, here's where that student messed up.
Well, a couple responses to that. First of all, the waiver that was submitted, the waiver extension to the No Child Left Behind Act, is of great importance to the state of Indiana. We really need the waiver extension to be granted. We're the first state in the country to have a condition placed on our waiver by the United States Department of Education. And so this response, the Department of Education had come in and surveyed Indiana and raised some real concerns. And so it was the Department of Education's job to respond to those to the satisfaction of the United States government in order to, keep those funds flowing, as well as the flexibility to use those funds to address our schools that are falling a little bit behind. So, I had not heard about that before the board meeting, that there was a response by the state board staff to the U.S. DOE. My understanding, however, is that that was specifically requested by the United States DOE, and the purpose of that really is that the Indiana Department of Education can file amendments subsequent to the filing of the waiver extension request.
But if you have staff working for the board, and this is not staff that is controlled by the superintendent, this is a whole different set of staff, why wouldn't you all not know what your staff is doing? That would almost be, you know, you come out of the corporate world, that would almost be like the board of directors of a corporation and the staff that serves that board, not the staff of the operating officer of the corporation, because that would be what Glenda Ritz and DOE is doing. Why wouldn't your staff tell y'all what they sent before they sent it? So if you had an objection to it or some of the other members have an objection to it, they could get to the staff and clean it up before somebody presses send on the email button.
Really, you know, obviously I learned about it at the meeting. I think we're talking about technical information that was being provided to the U.S. government. So it really wasn't, it was very much in the weeds on the waiver extension request. So, you know, I understand that there's going to be communications that happen that I'm not aware of every single phone call or every email that that happens.
Should you be? In other words, if you're saying that the superintendent needs to be accountable, then shouldn't, and her staff has to be accountable to her. And there have been instances, correct me if I'm wrong, where the state board is pointed fingers at her staff for not keeping her in the loop. Then shouldn't what's good for the goose be the same as for the duck? And CECI staff should be keeping you all informed?
You know, it's, I think they have done a tremendous job, to be honest, Amos, in keeping us apprised of just the amount of material that we have to deal with. Those staff members, really for the Department of Education and, CC and the State Board, you know, work nights, weekends, you know, nonstop, to deal with these important issues, to keep us informed. And, you know, so I think we have, you know, a lot of information in our hands, or sometimes where we wish we had more.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. When we come back, I want to ask Gordon Hendry, what is the really big question for education in the 2014-2015 school year? May not be the state board and the superintendent fighting, because I think they could make money for education filming the thing and selling it to Bravo or VH1 or TV1. I get some good, Drew, don't you think it would get some good ratings? Yeah, Drew thinks that. But more importantly, how do we evaluate the 2015 ISTEP versus the 2014 ISTEP that hopefully will be released before the State Fair opens on Friday? In this, and I'll share with some of the words that Dr. Dina Cushenberry of Warren Township in terms of the difficulty of this test. It's After News with Amos, After These.
Hello, this is King Ro Conley, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Going back a minute, we're with Gordon Hendry of the State Board of Education. Going back to the Arlington takeover situation, the state law the legislature passed, 1321, that allows an IPS school to have an educational operator run the education program, and credit for the academic performance would accrue to IPS, and IPS pays the maintenance bills, the education operator pays the staff. Is that the ultimate compromise, perhaps, for Arlington? And I noticed some of the board was reluctant to give it back, control back to IPS, but it sounded like they haven't read the state law. I think the state law could govern this.
Well, I think the operator for Arlington was talking about giving back regardless at the end of the school year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the question that the board was considering was, should it go back to IPS right away? And there was some concern on the board. I think people on the board have a high degree of confidence in Dr. Farabee and have been pleased with a number of the steps that he's already taken here in his tenure. But there was a concern that, you know, the state law had granted the state the right takeover rights, and really ultimately this is about providing the best educational environment for the kids. So we wanted to see it through with a takeover. And I don't think I think there's a lot of agreement that the takeover law probably needs some tweaks to improve it.
On takeover, there are four schools that the state board is looking at whether to intervene, two in Gary, two in Evansville. Have there been hearings where the state board has gone into those communities?
There have been. In July, there were hearings in Evansville mm-hmm. for the Evansville schools. And in August, August 11th and 12th, there'll be hearings in Gary.
Did you go to any of the Evansville?
I was not able
okay.
to go.
Okay. Will you be going to the ones up north?
I just got the email about it today. I'm definitely going to be looking at my schedule and doing everything I can to make sure I can attend.
Because they have changed the law since they did the hearings several years ago here in Indianapolis and Lake County. You all are allowed to participate in meetings via electronic means, phone, Skype. Are you all allowed to do that on the hearings?
You know, I'm not sure about the answer to that question. I don't see any reason why we couldn't. I think there's an interest of having as many members of the board there, mm-hmm. Whether it's physically present or, you know, with modern technology these days, it's pretty easy to open up a laptop and have Skype or participate right. by phone. So I think the idea is to have the board members actually hearing what's being considered that evening and being able to reflect based on that testimony.
If we took a poll of Hoosiers in terms of how they view public education in this state, it's probably going to be viewpoints all across the board. Whether they support the change, and there's a fair percentage that support the changes that have been made. There's a fair percentage that have reservations about the changes. There's probably also a fair percentage of Hoosiers are going to say, we have done a lot in education. Let's stop tinkering for a while and let's have a period of quiet and absorb these changes. Does the board reflect all of those values? Because it seems to people from the outside looking in that the board is wanting to change, and not a period of, okay, we've done a lot of changing. Let's absorb and slow down and let's see how all of this is working.
You know, I think collectively there's a feeling that we should just take a breath, catch our breath on education issues. I think, you know, however, you know, I believe you should always be innovating and always be looking for opportunities to improve. I think some of the things that we've had to deal with, unfortunately, have been a little self-inflicted. So, you know, we went through, as you know, Amos, went through a year-long plus process regarding the standards. Mm-hmm. That was something that, you know, I probably didn't feel was necessary, but that was something that the legislature decided to impose on us, and we, you know, we addressed it as best we could. So I think that, you know, there are many, many issues that we still need to give attention to, things like school safety, student health, licensing, you know, teacher evaluation. I think there are many, many issues that we still are going to have to address. But, you know, with everything in the news, I can understand a little bit the collective feeling that we might need to just you know, have a pause in some respects.
Let me go to Brenda, 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. First, my comment is that when I look at the board, the things that I read in the paper or hear on the news, it sounds just like it's dysfunctional, just as it is up in Washington. My next thing is I think they're making too many changes too fast, and these kids eventually are going to have problems passing any test. And I want to know the makeup of the board. Who are the people that are on these boards that make up all these different or come up with all these ideas? I mean, are there any people on their parents from the community? Because it seems like it's just too many business people making decisions for our everyday children.
I can tell you that under Indiana law, they have to have, what is it, four members of the board must be educators.
Okay,
and
that's fine.
And so there is at least one principal of Henryville, junior, senior high school down in the southern part of the state. There is, I'm trying to look down, Dr. Freitas, who is, what does he do?
He's at IU South Bend.
He's at IU South Bend. There are two classroom teachers. Actually three classroom teachers, Sarah O'Brien, Andrea Neal, and then,
Carrie Wicker.
And Carrie Wicker from the northern part, from the northeastern part of the state. There's only one African American and an attorney, named Tony Walker, who represents Northwest Indiana. There are parents in the case that a lot of the members of the board, you know, are professionals and their parents, but there is no just ordinary parent on the board.
I think that's what's missing.
A regular old parent.
I think they need some parents who are from the from these schools or in the neighborhoods where these schools are, you know, that actually interact with the teachers and the children in the community. I mean, because it just seems like it's dysfunctional.
Let me let Gordon Hendry on the board respond. How many? There are a total of 10 members, correct?
Yes.
And how many are Democrats?
Three.
Three Democrats, seven Republicans, and if you want more Democrats, elect a Democratic governor in 2 years.
Well, first off, let me respond by saying it's a great question, and I can appreciate your concern about what you've been reading in the newspaper, and my hope is that we can turn over a new leaf and get beyond some of this back and forth and roll up our sleeves and address the important issues that we are facing in public education here in Indiana. I got my start in public service working for Mayor Bart Peterson. You know, I've formerly worked for Representative Lee Hamilton. I live in Center Township. I send my daughter to Indianapolis Public Schools here in Indianapolis. And so, you know, I am a parent first and foremost, and my focus is on helping the best, build the best K through 12 education system for the students of our state.
All right, Brenda, great question. 239-1310, 239-1310. So we have this I-STEP, and we talked earlier to the superintendent of Warren Township because they started school today. And you all do not have the power to set one, or do you all have the power to set one? All schools start on the same day. Is that it? Is that in y'all's authority?
I wish we did, but I don't believe we do. You know, it is still July, so I'm not quite sure I understand the reasoning there.
So you can do all the, this board can do all these great educational innovations, but you can't say school ought to start like in the middle of the latter part of August.
You know, we need to look into that, but you won't hear from me any complaints about schools increasing the number of days they have in the school year and increasing the educational opportunities for our students. So I understand it's July,
I'll let you talk this to the people at State Fair because we're out there on Friday. But seriously, on this I-STEP, we talked to Dr. Cushenberry at Warren Township, and obviously they know this is a harder I-STEP coming in March. They know the standards are tougher, even though they have been integrating the old Common Core standards and whatever we got now, Common Core Light or whatever, college and career ready standards. But their expectation is this is going to be a harder test. This is going to be a test that will probably lower scores across the board for all kinds of schools, whether it's Cathedral, whether it's the best schools like Seidner Academy and IPS to the schools that are not as performing well. Do we need to set expectations for parents, or we need to say to Indiana, this is a brand new scenario. We're starting from day one. Forget every other I-STEP you've ever heard, and we're starting from scratch. And should that be a consistent message coming from the policy? Because y'all, maybe not you personally, y'all have implemented this monster.
Absolutely. Well, first off, let's remember that standards haven't changed greatly. You know, the standards that we adopted here in the spring did not really fundamentally change as to the standards that were previously in place and that were being implemented.
But the way students are going to be tested is changing. There's
going to
be less of multiple choice, more where the students have to think of what the answer is or justify the answer, whether it's writing it in writing or typing it on a computer. And nobody has really seen what this thing is going to look like. And every place this has been implemented, scores have dropped sharply across the board, whether you're smart, whether you're not so smart, whether you're black, white, green, or otherwise, rural or urban, they've dropped.
You're right. I don't know that I would characterize them as dropping sharply, but there has been an adjustment period typically when new tests have been implemented, and I think this is a good thing. This is change is good here, and I think we're moving in the right direction. You know, there will be a little bit of a different test, and traditionally you've seen scores decrease somewhat, and we'll factor that into the overall school grades and so on as a state board. But most importantly, I believe in our students and I believe in our teachers, and I think they can rise to the challenge. We've got a number of months till next spring, and I just have a great deal of confidence in them that they'll be able to step up to the challenge.
So from your perspective, we don't need to bring the United Nations in here, to mediate between the board and the superintendent. I don't need to call my friend Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson to come in here and let us reason, together, or maybe John Stewart.
I think they have more important things to do. Honestly, I think we're, working our way through the issues as to our board governance. And trying to be as thoughtful as we can. And there has been, I think, some misunderstandings about how meetings are run. And unfortunately, that's led to some of the disagreements. I think that we'll move beyond that. As we clarify the board governance rules and hopefully we'll run smoother meetings.
The next big policy issue the board is facing is what?
Boy, you know, this assessment issue is huge, because.
So that's figuring out how the A through F is going to be calculated.
No. It's the planning for the new I-STEPS that's coming in 2015. So there'll be an RFP issued here shortly, that speaks to that. And there's been a great amount of work going into that. And I think also, Amos, I'd say that, hearing back from the United States Department of Education on the waiver extension is going to be critically important. We should know here in the coming weeks what the response is. I haven't received much feedback on that yet, and I'm hoping to. But I think that's going to be a critically important issue for us to deal with.
Given that the board has held hearings outside of Indianapolis on takeover schools. I mean, they've been up to Gary, your guys going down to Evansville. On trying to explain, once you all decide what the I-STEP 2015 test is going to look like, feel like, operate, should the board hold regional meetings in each of the congressional districts in the state to kind of have town halls or video things or ways where people can go in a school and use distant learning? We have great distant learning technology here in this state, so that people, whether they're in a rural area, whether they're in the big city or in our smaller communities, really understand what's coming down. Maybe so the schools, and I mentioned this to the superintendent, maybe, you know, pick a night where it's pizza night. Come on, have pizza, you know, have the potluck, see the video presentation and discuss this, to really engage who's your parents and grandparents and guardians as to what this monster is going to be.
Well, I think you make a very good point. It's a valid point. We need to make sure that it's State Board of Education and the Department of Education get the word out to make it as easily understood by students and parents and teachers as we can. And that's going to be coming through the Department of Education. There are going to be, you know, these briefings and practice tests and so on to really help people adapt to what it's going to look like. So that's in the works. I think your point on, trying to increase the, access to educational opportunities as it relates to the tests, all across the state is a good idea.
We also talk about state board deals a lot with testing and accountability, but where is the dollars for remediation? I got an email at praiseindy.com. Why are there not more funds focused on remediation when the testing identifies what skills students need to improve? Are there funds available to implement programming for remediation? We keep hearing that because of the budget cuts from the legislature, that the money is not there for remediation. So, you know, the school sees that Johnny is at a D level in I-STEP, but there's no funds to try to bring him from D to C or higher.
That's a great question. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why the waiver extension from the federal government is so important, is because having the waiver in place from the United States Department of Education allows Indiana to use federal funds in a flexible way, Title I funds, on our priority and focus school. Those are schools that need some help. So that's one of the reasons why the board is so focused on the waiver extension, is because that really gives us as much flexibility as we can have under law to address those needs.
But being denied the waiver does not eliminate Title I funding for Indiana, does it?
That's true.
It does not
eliminate it, but it really reduces our flexibility. We're basically hamstrung by the federal government and the No Child Left Behind law in how we address those issues.
One final thing, with the focus of the Federal Department of Education, Federal Justice Department on fairness in discipline and reducing the disproportionalities in discipline and the disproportionality in special education. Has the state board ever addressed that issue? And if not, why not?
Not during my tenure. And I think that's a great point. I think, you know, how discipline is addressed in our schools is, you know, one of the most important issues that schools are facing. And we need to have a focus on that. I mean, I think we all recognize the issues relating to safety and bullying and those kind of issues, as well as how kids are dealt with. You know, I mean, we hear these news stories about, you know, the kid who, you know, ate a sandwich into the shape of a gun and gets expelled. And I think that's, you know, those kind of knee-jerk reactions as it relates to school discipline are really more harmful to students than they are helping them.
Gordon Hendry, member at large, the only at large member of the Indiana State Board of Education. There are 10 members, one representing each of Indiana's 9 congressional districts. And then there is one member at large. And then the chair is Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. And if you search online for Indiana State Board of Education, you'll find their website where they have video archives of their meetings. And you can see, that how boring most of the meeting is. Because, like I said, people see the 20 seconds of the fight, and they didn't see the 4 hours and 40 seconds of the rest of the meeting. Gordon Hendry, thanks very much for being. And can we be a new dad again?
No.
Oh, okay, all right.
We're not breaking news here today.
Okay, I thought you were. You never know. Thank you. We'll be back with more with our remaining moments.